You're listening to episode 20 of the FEMA Health Show. Thanks so much for joining me today. We're talking with Amy Crook from Enterprise Fitness, and she's discussing performance. And we're talking about being an athlete and how to become a better athlete. We're talking about Amy's journey to being a coach, education around athletes and training athletes, the mindset involved with being an athlete, how to improve performance, what hinders performance and recovery, how we've been coping with lockdown, and even female amenorrhea. This conversation we have is so important for everyone. It's not just for athletes. Whilst we still talk about athletes and performance, the general gist and what we talk about is easily applicable to general population and you. If you're listening to this and you think, wow, maybe this is not my podcast, I shouldn't be listening to this one, I really encourage you to keep listening and you'll probably get out some gold nuggets with the things that we say in terms of mental health and mindset that you can definitely start implementing in your life today. We both had so much fun talking in this episode, so I hope you enjoy it. If you have any questions, our contact details are in the description box, whichever directory you are listening to this, it should be there. Please don't forget to subscribe if you're listening to this episode on Spotify or iTunes so you get the latest and most recent episode updates. Thanks for coming out, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. We're talking about females and performance today, which I'm really excited about. And I wanted to introduce you to my audience. So give me a little bit of a spiel. Let my audience know who you are.
Yeah. So my name's Amy Crook. I'm a senior coach at Enterprise Fitness. I've been a personal trainer for just over 6 years now. I started off in group training, then went into personal training, did some training with young junior athletes, and now I'm at Enterprise.
So yeah, wow. So tell us
a little background. Yeah.
Tell us how you went from the group fitness to the personal training to the athletes.
I think it was a pretty flowy like transition, funnily enough. So the group training, it was everything I've sort of done is where I was actually training. So, and then I sort of got a job as a coach there. So with the group training, it was more of an athletic based style outdoor group training. So that was great to start off with in the industry because I learned more of a performance style. We were trained like a footy team. So from the get-go, I was taught discipline, to push out of your comfort zone, that sort of thing from the get-go. I was training there first, then became a coach. Then I wasn't really strength training at that stage. I was just doing bodyweight stuff. Mm-hmm. I wanted to learn more about strength training. So that's when I went into training at a facility which was for performance. Training mainly junior athletes. There were older athletes as well. I wasn't, I guess, classified as a junior at that stage.
Junior footy athletes, you mean?
All athletes. So any any sport. It was mainly basketball, but it could be any sport. And so I started training there just to learn the basics of lifting. And then I did an internship there. So mm-hmm. I did a 12-month internship. And then got hired as a coach. So then I got to work with the athletes, which was great. And it was very much from the performance side of view. And then from there, I wanted to work because it was one-on-one and group with the athletes. Mm-hmm. So you had, say, there would be five athletes to one coach. So it was a different kind of setup. And then I really wanted to go more into the one-on-one because I saw the benefit of working one-on-one and directly with an individual and how much more you could get out of them. So then I went to the next workplace and started doing one-on-one and group training there. So that group training was more just general pop, but one-on-one. So, and then I even more realized I really, really like the personal training side of things. Just really being able to look at their nutrition, look at their form and technique, and individual like program for them as an individual rather than in a group setting. It's a bit hard in a group, you can't really correct every single person's technique to be perfect. So so that's when I went completely into personal training one-on-one and moved to Enterprise.
Yeah. And so what have you learned from that transition from having, obviously we spoke about you moved through the group to the one-on-one and now, specializing a little bit of both. What was the main shift from, obviously you learn a lot about group and the one-on-one, but why you saw the benefit, but why specifically was it now you wanted to be this personal trainer, training these athletes one-on-one? What was the big light bulb moment for you?
I think especially with athletes, because the training isn't their main thing, they've got their sport. So when you're doing that one-on-one training with them, you're helping them and you're improving them in their sport. So you're seeing it translate into something else, not just what you're doing right then and there with them. So I find that personally really rewarding. And I get a lot of joy of it. I like, sports myself. And I saw the benefits in myself doing that, doing the strength training and it transitioning into my performance in a sport. So that, seeing that, yeah, I got a lot of joy out of, and I just, yeah, I get really excited
You
to
liked it.
coach that.
I can
Yeah, I
see.
liked it.
And so when you're training your athletes, what are, so let's just maybe give us an example of who you've trained and the best experience you've had with them, or how that experience kind of flourished and what they achieved.
Well, the main athletes that I have trained is boxers. So the first is actually, well, prior to that, I did train an array of different athletes. Not the one-on-one, that was more in the group setting. So that was basketballers. I didn't get to see so much the transition in their sport in that one, more so from a point of view of I wasn't going to their sports. You're dealing with so many athletes at once. So you were a little bit more only seeing the improvements in the gym, because you don't have that very close relationship. But then when I started to train some boxers, then I was able to see that transition. So Harry Garside was one of the first boxers and athletes I trained one-on-one. And with Harry, that was, yeah, a very lucky situation that me and Harry found ourselves in. We started working together. And Harry actually worked his way up to the Commonwealth Games, and then actually won gold at the Commonwealth Games. So
So
that was
exciting.
just absolutely insane. Like to see someone who came to you, it's a training and nutrition, but who was eating literally fruit cups and tuna and muesli bars
Wow.
when I
Oh my
first
God.
met him to, I think it was a year and a half later, then competing at the Commonwealth Games, and being the absolute best there out of all these
It'll flip.
countries. Yeah, total flip. And the hard work is completely Harry, but just seeing that transition in the way he moved in the gym and the improvements in his fitness, in his sport, and just in his general health and awareness of what he needed to do to be a better athlete was amazing. So
Yeah.
yeah.
It's good when athletes reach out because they want more, but you got to give yourself credit, Amy. Like you got him to that level, and that's pretty exciting as well, especially with nutrition, where you're saying fruit cups. That's terrible. That's terrible. So that's
It's
kind of
very
like
common.
really
Yeah, it's
for a
very
lot of
common.
athletes to eat really trashy food.
Yeah, I think it's just there's just not that education around it. It's not necessarily that they're eating trashy food as such, but just they just don't have the education around it. And it's
Yeah,
really
okay.
unfortunate, because we have these high level athletes, and they deserve to do really well because they work extremely hard. But the education is there a little bit, but not to
It's not enough.
the level. Yeah, it's not enough. It's really not enough, and it's not to the level that it should be for the work that they put in.
So for a performance athlete, like we're talking about boxers right now, what is the optimal nutrition for someone like that? Or, example, maybe a footy player or powerlifter, what is their ideal nutritional intake?
In regards to a powerlifter, I can't really comment on that because I haven't trained a
Yeah.
powerlifter. But if it in regards to sport, the difference that it's going to be, I guess, compared to not so much a general pop person, but someone whose body composition or looking to lose body fat, the slight difference is athletes going to need a lot more carbs. You're not wanting to deplete them. You don't want to put them into a calorie deficit. They need their food to perform, to recover. So, and a lot of them, especially in a sport like boxing, They do still have to make weight, so that is obviously something you have to consider. But at the same time, a lot of them are under eating all the time, therefore they're probably overtraining. So they're under eating, overtraining, not recovering, and they're just running themselves into the ground. So making sure that they're eating, to their baseline calories, if not most of the time above, because their expenditure is so high, but they're going to need a lot more carbohydrates than average Joe.
And for what else is important in terms of recovery besides nutrition?
Yeah, there's the main things. I mean, it's the same, to be honest, it's no different recovery to an athlete to a normal person, because they are people in the end. But sleep is huge. Sleep is massive. And I think that's one thing that definitely I've tried to educate the athletes I've worked with that they're not getting enough sleep. Minimum 8 hours for someone who's, performing in a sport. Hydration also is key. So making sure they're drinking enough water. Again, in a sport like boxing, they're usually not drinking anywhere near enough. Again, because it's that mentality of trying to make weight and cut the water out, so I weigh less, but then your performance just goes down dramatically and your recovery.
Do you find there's also a mental game, with the athlete who wants to make a weight class? Yeah. If they're not at that weight class level yet, how hard is that mental side of, I've got to, do you cut? Do I bulk? Or what, do I compete now? How do you tackle that?
As in what, their mental side of things?
Yeah, to make a weight class and perform at the highest level that they can.
Yeah, I guess, again, it's just education, and it comes down, it is hard. And I've had my challenges with the boxers I've worked with, because they come from that background of drop your food down, drop your water down, train, as hard as you can, go in the sauna, deplete yourself. So it's very, it is tough to try and switch their mindset around that, it doesn't mean eat less. You need to eat more, leading into those sort of things, and then taper off a little bit. But yeah, I'm just trying to think how I've sort of tackled it. I think it's just education. If I find podcasts that I think, they'll enjoy listening to and get information from, then I'll send them podcasts or an article I've read. Or sometimes it's also other coaches saying things. Sometimes just one voice isn't enough. So, being an enterprise, Mark will come over and say something, or one of the other coaches will come and say something. It's just making sure they're hearing it all the time. The right things to do, and eventually it sinks in. So
it drums in somehow.
it takes a long time, though. It's definitely not easy or a quick fix, especially someone who has started their sport from a young age and they've been doing something for so long. There's a lot of habits to break and try and change.
And when it comes to programming for the athlete, obviously to prepare them for a comp, you're trying to break these bad habits or these, negative cycles in their headspace and maybe their structure of their program before. What's the best, when you're planning their program, are you planning them way in advance? If a client comes to you, if someone's, I want to compete in 3 weeks, what do you do with that? What's that conversation like?
Yeah. Are we talking boxers or are we talking anyone in general, any sport?
Anyone, any example you got. Start with boxers, maybe, and then go through the,
If they said they want to compete in 3 weeks and they'd done absolutely no strength training before in the past, then there's not, to be honest, in 3 weeks, there's not a whole lot
you problem. Can do with
it. Yeah, because you think of anyone who starts off a training program, they're generally quite sore straight away. And you could say, okay, well, if they're competing in 3 weeks, we'll put them into just conditioning straight away, but they're still going to pull up sore from that. So I'd probably just work on their, do a structural balance and work on their weaknesses and things like mobility to begin with, if it's only a 3 week window. And it's funny you asked me that, because that's what happened with Harry when I first started with him.
I
think we had 2 weeks. Yeah, we had 2 weeks. So I didn't do much, just do mobility stuff with him and just got his food on the right path. Then once he competed, then we got into it, because it was just too close to introduce something so new right before a comp. It was just too risky. If they have, you know, if they had previously been strength training, again, it's very similar to anyone else who's strength trained. Most of the time when you get someone, they've strength trained, but they, you know, are really.
She just did quotations. So we can't, no one's going to see the video. Strength train in quotation marks.
That's it. They're most likely aren't moving that great. Yeah. And they are going to have, you know, weaknesses and limitations. So again, put them through a structural balance and really start them at the start. You'll see after, you know, you put them through a GPP phase, like you'll see how they start to move. But again, I'm not going to put them on a barbell straight away. You're going to get them moving properly first and then build them from there. So it's really no different. It's really no different. Just because they're an athlete doesn't mean that they just know how to move really well and they're really strong. That's not the case. If anything, they're potentially in, what's the word? Like they're not even in as good a position as a general pop client because most
they're so beat up in their head as well.
And they, you know, don't want to go, they haven't wanted to go near weights, you know, because weights makes you slow again. You know, that's quotations. That's the mentality. So most likely they don't have any experience in that at all. So they're going to be, more restricted than your average person.
And how you're saying a lot about, you know, getting these athletes who come to you to do a structural balance phase and a movement phase and, you know, just check up on how they actually move within with weights and their body weight. So how important is mobility here then?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like anyone, you're not going to, if you don't have that that mobility and that range of motion, you know, you're not going to load someone up. So it's important to assess that first and then train them in a full range of motion as well. So it's very, very important.
And I'm just like kind of emphasizing your point on the mobility because a lot of clients that also come to see me don't move very well at all. And it's like, okay, we've got to start from the beginning. We've really got to build your movement. And they're like, but I want to do this and I want to do that, you know? And I'm like, no. We need to focus on this first. And then, you know, they finally get it and they're like, oh, I can actually squat properly now. I can go all the way.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's exciting. But I think, you know, a lot of people want to go to all this variety and all this hard hit type of training. And it's whoa, slow down.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I think as well, people see things on social media and see things, you know, that, you know, sports as well. Oh, look at this athlete's doing this really fancy pliometry
routine.
And it's like, well, you know, number one, it's probably just for show. And secondly, like if you can't move well, then you haven't earned the right to, you know, do things. It's the basics always come first. So the basics matter most, and especially as athletes, the basics are going to get you strong and make you more efficient at your sport. And I think that's where social media can be dangerous on that sense because they think that they need to do all these fancy things in the gym. It's like, no. Like your skills, the fun stuff is your sport. The gym is just for the basic stuff to make you better at your sport. We're not going to do this crazy fancy stuff here. That's not what it's about. Your main focus is your sport. So it's just reminding them of that as well. Like, yes, it might seem boring, but you know what? That's the focus is your sport. So that's what we're going to keep, you know, our eyes on.
And in terms of like home training has been so hard for so many people and linking it back to performance, if you've got clients at the moment who are in lockdown, how are you tackling that with them? You know, is their training boring, but it's, you know, still hitting the basics. What is that like for them?
It's a bit, luckily, the athletes that I'm training at the moment, they get access to gyms or like Harry, for example, has gone to Queensland, so he can still train normally at the moment.
That's so good.
It's good for them. They've, you know, had that access. Not all of them have though. Just working with what they've got at home. That's all you can do. I guess it's like everyone else at this point in time. Their sports are on hold. So it's just maintaining a basic level of fitness, keeping them moving. Just doing the best that you can with what we've got. Some have equipment, some have nothing. So Yeah, it does make it very tricky, but everyone's in the same boat, I guess. So,
yes to all the above. What else can affect performance negatively besides the mobility that we spoke about and like the structuring of a program? If it's not, what's the word? The program isn't designed properly, it's probably not going to be effective. Mm-hmm. So, what else can affect the performance of an athlete negatively?
Poor nutrition. So nutrition is super important. That's another thing that unfortunately just the education isn't there, and that's up to us to teach them. So not having things like fruit cups and muesli bars, like having, you know, wholesome nutritious food, the right amount of food, not depleting themselves. I think as well, depending on the athlete and how close they are to the competition, creating a balance for them as well, not having being too strict for too long. They're human too. Yeah. So making sure when they're on, but at times they, you know, need some leeway as well, because no one can be 100%.
Do you mean as in balance with like social life as well? Is that what you're trying to say? Yeah.
Yeah. Social life, nutrition, everything. Yeah. Everything.
Yeah.
What else can affect their performance?
Stress
can definitely affect, I guess, stress as well. Like, it's going to affect them physically, but also it's going to affect them mentally, just like anyone else. So coaching them as well, for their mindset is super, super important, as well as for their nutrition, their training, recovery. So it's the same for, like, sometimes I'll send them podcasts or things like that, or quotes to, you know, help get them in the right headspace, or books that I've read, or things like that. But giving them that mental support is also super important.
There's that bell curve, isn't there, where you've got the overexcitability and the underexcited or something like that, and in the middle is like the right amount,
the right point.
What happens when someone's overexcited or overexcitable, or is it what's that bell curve? You know what I'm talking about, Evie. Come on, help me out.
I know what you're talking about.
Too much stimulation.
Definitely not going to help them, because they're not, their body's just going to be in that state of stress the whole time. So it's important for them, especially, you know, it's fine to be like that when you're ready to perform, but they need to come back into that, you know, rest and digest state and relax and recover properly, because if they stay in that amped up state for way too long, their body's just gonna not be able to perform well, not going to be able to recover. You know, especially if you've got a sport that you're trying to make weight, it's going to hold on to fluid and things like that, so their sleep's going to be affected as well.
And I had in one of my notes, I wanted to ask you about alcohol and you know, late nights, and how does alcohol change someone's performance?
Not very good at all. Not great at all. I can talk about that in that sense from a personal point of view and feeling the effects on my performance when I've done boxing. You definitely know. It's probably, I remember my coach said to me, even he'll be able to tell if I'd, you know, had a night out or something, and then I come to training on the Monday, the reactions are just not there. Your reflexes.
Reaction time.
Reaction time is slow. I mean, that's from a reaction point of view. Obviously, it's going to affect, you know, your body composition, the way your ability to recover. It's going to affect your sleep, because alcohol, you know, is definitely not something that you want to have if you want great sleep for recovery. It might make you feel tired at the time and, you know, you fall asleep quick, but you're definitely not going to get that deep REM sleep that you need, and sleep is like number one for your performance. So
agree they all link into each other in some way, so it's so interesting how the body works.
That's the thing, that's it, like your nutrition, your you know, your mobility, stretching sessions, your alcohol, all those things, they're all intertwined together. So you're never going to be able to, if you neglect one, it's going to have an effect on everything. So everything really does need to be on point if you're wanting to perform at a very high level. There's just nothing can be missed. It's all about the one percenters.
Yeah, and that's why people need to get coaches, professional coaches, yes, who can help them properly,
100%.
Right?
100%. Yeah, it's just not, I mean, even from my own point of view, as a coach myself, and you would know, like, when you have someone there, you're going to miss things. Even when you know everything, you have the education and everything, you're going to miss things when you're trying to figure it all out for yourself, and when you're trying to focus on your sport and do well at it. So having a coach there who knows what they're doing, who has your back, who's on your team, who's, you know, there to support you through every step of the way is so, so important.
Yeah, because we can't see our blind spots. Like, we can't see what we're doing wrong sometimes, or what is not working for us. Or maybe we think it's working, but in the long run, to peak at that time, it's not going to be, we're going to peak too early, or we're going to peak too late. So I think, yeah, you need, and that education, like you keep saying, 100%, that coach, that professional coach is going to help so much more, elevate your knowledge, elevate your success. And that's what obviously why we compete. We want to succeed in what we're doing. So I completely agree with you.
And I think just on that education, I was just going to say with that, I think that's, again, something important. And most athletes might not think, I mean, some are very open to it, but some might just think, oh, I just want to get better at my sport. And that's totally fine. But I think if you long-term want to be successful, having an actual understanding of why you're doing things, and asking questions and wanting to learn at the same time, you're going to go a lot further. Because as much as we'd all like to have our coach with us forever, the reality is you're probably not. So taking that information on board for yourself, and when you understand things as well, you tend to, you know, want to do them or do them at a higher level. So I think, that's important as an athlete to want to learn as well.
Agree. It makes you a better athlete. It makes you, if you're teachable and you can implement that stuff, it makes you better human in general as well.
Yes, that's right.
We're not here just to passively live. We've got to actively live. We've got to make some mistakes. We've got to learn. We've got to change. We have to change to grow. So I think that's really important. My next question is, what are the best ways you can measure your performance in the gym?
I would look at indicator lifts. That's probably the best way.
Can you explain that? My audience might be like, what is an indicator lift?
So for example, if we're looking at someone like a boxer, you would look at their incline bench. You might pick their incline bench and deadlift. So you pick a upper and a lower lift, and you want to use those two lifts, generally two, as the main indicator to see how they're performing and increasing in the gym. But those lifts need to be direct transition or correlation with their sport. So with, for example, incline bench, you would get if it's a fighter, they're going to be having a biacromial grip. So that's quite, no one can see this, but like a grip. So it's going to be in line with their shoulders. So which is so when they're punching within that space. Yeah. So they're not going to go a wide grip bench like a powerlifter because they're not punching out to the sides. Yeah. So that's going to correlate into their sport. So you want to pick something that's going to match their sport,
be able to show us that they're improving in that area of the potential sport to apply it to their sport. That's what you mean.
Correct. For example, if they're not going up in their incline bench and they're just sitting the same, like, they're most likely, their punching power is not going to increase. So that's the direct correlation with that sport. The best thing is going to be how they're performing in their sport, to be honest. So I mean, obviously you want them improving the weight that they're moving in the gym. You want their indicator lifts to be increasing, even though they're increasing in weight, say on the bar. You want to make sure the bar speed is there for them. They're not grinding away, they're not bodybuilding training, so we don't want to want them grinding in their sessions. We always want that explosive power to be there. But the best way is going to be feedback from the athlete, how they're, you know, checking in with them every week. How are they recovering? How are they feeling in their training sessions, in their sport? How are they, you know, when there's a competition, how did they feel in their competition? Getting feedback from those things, because then that can help you tweak things in programming and the way that you train them. And I think as well, being one-on-one with an athlete, that this is why I like it so much as well, is that everyone is so different, as you know, training any person. So some people do well, say, on 4 days program. Some people do really well on 2 days of program. It just depends on the individual. So that's why checking in and seeing how they're performing in their training and their sport is so important, and seeing improvements there, because if then you're not seeing it, then that means you need to change things that you're doing. Because again, what we do with them in the gym is only there to support and help their sport. It's not there. We're not trying to make them, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. We're not, it's not all about, you know, if it means if I put them on a 4 day program, cause that's what works at the time. But, 1 or 2 weeks in, they're just not recovering. Then they're starting to feel slow in their sport. They're not running as fast, or they're not punching as hard, or whatever it might be. Okay. Maybe 4 days is way too much for you and your body. So let's try 3. Let's try 2. Some I've worked with, like, 2 is more than enough. Me personally, I did through my whole fight prep, I did 2 days of strength training a week, and that was it for the whole time. So
that
worked perfect with me and what I needed. So again, yeah, everyone's just different.
Yeah, more is not always better.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
And so what would be an indicator lift? Maybe another example would be really cool for the audience, of a runner, perhaps.
A runner, I would do a chin up.
Interesting. Yeah. And why?
So, yeah. chin up is a good indication for your speed or your sprinting ability. So yeah, that's
wow, that's cool.
It's very, well, more so for a female too as well.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I would never have thought a chin up for a runner.
Yeah,
that's why you're the athlete coach. So what are the benefits of strength training?
Oh, so many.
Well, if we apply it to a boxer, why would a boxer want to strength train? What is it actually beneficial for?
Yep. So punching power. There's so many little things. So punching power, also with a fighter or with a boxer, a lot of their power comes from their legs. So training their legs is super important. Strong, powerful legs, because a lot think it just comes from their upper body, but it doesn't. Power comes from the ground up. So being able to transition that power through their legs, through their torso, through their lat, and then through the punch. What else? Injury prevention. It's super important. That's probably one of the biggest things for athletes as well. You know, I remember when I worked with the junior athletes, and athletes in general, you know, can be quite nervous to start strength training, because, you know, you think, oh, I'll get injured in the gym from strength training. Yet, if you think about it, every single sport is, you know, they're getting knocked about from a young age. They're jumping off things, and oh, the stuff that they're doing and they're putting their bodies through is just absolutely insane from such a young age. And they've got no conditioning, no strength or anything. So especially from a young age, making sure that they're, it teaches them to move properly, because they're doing all these crazy plyometric things, but then they can't even squat properly. So they have no body awareness as well. So
that's huge.
That's a really important thing to teach them as well.
And that's, like, I love when I see, and it's another thing on social media, when there's, like, these young 6 or 8 year olds doing Olympic weightlifting, and I'm like, damn, that 6 year old can squat so good with weight on her body or his body. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, wow, like, that's so incredible for a young child to learn all these little things that as adults suck at if you don't have any of this strength and conditioning background or someone teaching you this stuff. And I think it's incredible. So for a junior athlete, if they're not used to having any of that strength training side and a coach who teach them movement correction, all that, it's just their body's just going everywhere, running into people, banging into things, falling over, tripping over, hurting the ankle. Oh, I don't know. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're literally like baby giraffes, and you know,
I love that.
You teach them to move properly. Yeah, we teach them to move properly from a young age. Oh, they're going to be so much safer in their sport. So yeah, it's just so important. And there's just this, I think definitely the industry is getting so much better. There are a lot of people out there that are specializing in junior athletes. But yeah, it's getting more and more known, and less people are afraid to, I think, get their kids training at a young age, which is really good. But again, it just needs to be a bit more of a push, because otherwise, yeah, you do get adult athletes who don't know how to squat, who, you know, are unstable and have all these imbalances, and but they're doing these extreme sports and putting their body through so much, they just don't have the basics there to after them.
And I think I just thought of this now when we talk about like junior athletes or any child wanting to lift weight. People and parents often, they kind of scrunch their nose like, oh, I don't know, that's not safe. They can, you know, stump their gross plates in quotation marks, which is so not true. It's so not true. It helps their hormones, and they probably have better testosterone and actually make them grow taller and all those other beautiful benefits of bone density and muscle mass and conditioning of their body. So I hope that it changes over the years with the information that's coming out for athletes. Because otherwise it's
going to
go, Amy.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing. I was just 100% agreeing. Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise it's just going to go down the same old path and everyone's going to be scared, and that's not the way. Like, lifting is so safe and so good for our bodies, our mind, everything. And that's why having the gyms closed right now is doing everyone's heads in, because it's not just physical, it's mental.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Side rant.
Let's see it.
Jeez. actually, you know, what have you been doing to keeping yourself sane in this lockdown anyway?
Training. Like, even though, training. I bought myself, the first lockdown, I luckily had some equipment, just free weights and stuff, kettlebells and things like that. So I was doing more, I guess, conditioning HIIT sessions. I got over that pretty quickly. So I decided to buy myself a barbell and some plates, and I luckily got off a colleague's client. I was just giving away a free squat rack, so like, luckily for him, I got that. So I set that up in the garage, and now I've decked out my garage. So yeah, this especially second lockdown, I've been training. So training 4 or 5 days a week, riding my bike. I bought a new mountain bike, so that's been great fun.
That's awesome.
Something a bit different, but yeah, just training, trying to make that like the constant kind of most days. That keeps me grounded, even some days when I don't feel like it, just somehow doing something. Walking quite a lot, as I said, riding my bike. I've done a lot of like self-development from a point of view, like personal self-development, more so than coaching, which is different. I think the last few years I've done a lot of coaching, self-development, and yeah, I just went internal this time and done a lot of personal stuff, and I've actually really enjoyed it. And I think I needed, like, obviously no one wanted this to happen, but it's
no,
allowed me to pause and stop and go, hang on, maybe things in life weren't going quite the best way possible, and you just don't realize at the time. So it's allowed me to reset and, I guess, prioritize what is most important. So yeah
that's 100%.
Definitely hasn't been easy.
No, it hasn't been easy, but I think a lot of people can like empathize with that as well, where they found that this slow down motion highlighted issues in their life, or maybe not issues, but things that they were doing more of something else and not prioritizing themselves and prioritizing their own mental health. And I think sometimes we push our work so high up because at some level, sometimes we just want to avoid something, or we're ignoring something, or we're bored, we don't know what else to do. So it was kind of like, in my own self, a nice realization that there are other things to do besides work, and you know, personally develop my own self rather than always being in work mode and giving my energy out all the time.
And that's so funny you say that. That's exactly me. Exactly what I have gone through and realized. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, it is. But I think it's really good. Like, I think going into the next year, hopefully coronavirus is not here and we're not in lockdown, but going to the next year, like, it's exciting because if we have somewhat normality again, it'll be nice to kind of see what changes, or how we've changed, Because we know that we have, but applying that into a normal setting where things are open again and we're going to have the business and everyone's going to want to catch up, yada, 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 it's going to be a little bit hectic, I'm assuming. So it's going to be interesting.
It will be. Yeah, that's the thing. I think when you go through like a growth period, it's like you've got to, like you said, apply it. And I think it's important, like telling people that are close to you as well, what you want to change and adjust and what you have changed and adjusted, and to get them to hold you accountable to it, because we just slip back easily into what we were doing previously. And making sure that you don't do that.
I
think
love
if
that.
The, yeah, I think if the, like for example myself, like I don't want to go back to the way I was living life, because I realize now it was just too on the go,
too much.
Way for, it was too much. It was too much, and I don't know how I didn't, you know, fall into a heap. And so for me, it's the, I guess not the fear, but it's like enough now to be, it's a deal breaker. Like I cannot go back there. So I know I've told people close to me of the new life that I want to lead and that I'm living now, and they'll hold me accountable and vice versa to them. So I think that's important to just share it and be open about it.
If you keep it in as well, like you're saying, you've got to share it, because if you keep it in, people don't know what you want to do. And some people think, assume that everyone should know what, or that person, you know, they're close to me, they should know that what I'm like, or I've told them this. Sometimes you've got to reiterate it. Sometimes you've got to keep telling the same thing. I know that's not what I want to do right now. No, I'm not going to act like in this way, or I'm not going to prioritize that right now. So yeah, that's really important.
100%.
What's the last piece of advice you would give to anyone listening right now who might be afraid to strength train or take their fitness to the next level?
Ooh, well, if you just keep staying in your comfort zone, nothing's going to change, is it? That's not the main thing. If you're afraid to strength train, well, I think just get educated. Like find, as we spoke about before, get a coach that, you know, is going to help teach you, educate you. Isn't just going to tell you what to do, that you can learn and grow as an athlete, as a person. Because usually we are afraid to do something because we're not educated on it. So education is the biggest thing. So getting yourself a coach, I would definitely recommend, even if you do it for a short period of time, just to, you know, get the momentum going, and then you'll probably find you want to stay. But
yeah. What's the worst that can momentum. Happen?
Exactly. And anyone who wants to take their health and fitness to the next level, again, get a coach. I always have a coach. I just can't recommend it enough. Like, I think I've always had a coach, whether it's been in group training or personal training. But I think there was a small period where I didn't have a coach when I first did start doing one-on-one training. And then I was just like, no, that's me personally. That's how I learn. That's how I grow and excel. Like, yes, I obviously know things and learn things as I go along as a coach, but like, I just think like you can always grow more. So just keep getting a coach, you know, work with someone for 12 months, then go work with someone else and learn from them. And yeah, I think it's just really the best way to do it.
Yeah. Get a coach. That is the message.
That's the message. One of the biggest things, and this is like, you'll know about this too. Generally, a lot of female athletes can potentially lose their period. I've seen it myself personally from when I was training for a fight, and I've seen it with a few other athletes, and I read articles on it and things like that. But I think with females, especially young females, something to be aware of as a coach and as an athlete is that they can tend to lose their cycle because of the level that they are training at. So again, that's really important to educate them on what their body could potentially go through, and making sure their nutrition is at a level where it's going to help support their body as well, because being quite lean, again, that's going to affect your cycle as well. So I think, yeah, that's a big thing for
supporting their body. I think you see it at the highest level and the lowest level, even the for like the juniors, you probably might not be aware of it, and then the adults, they know it, but they're not really sure what else to do about it. Do you have a recommendation for the both the junior and an adult level?
Myself personally, I would, one again, I'm going to say have a coach who knows what they're doing, and he's going to go, no, honestly, because not everyone is going to care about that stuff.
You know,
not everyone's going to, not every coach is going to be like concerned whether you're losing your cycle or not. They're just going to be like, no, we're just going to focus on your performance. So yes, the performance is key in their sport, but at the same time, especially as a junior, like it's not going to be healthy for them to not be having that regular cycle. So having a coach that's going to support you on that, from a personal point of view, I see a naturopath. So I guess having a team on board that's going to help as well. And because a naturopath is, you know, for me personally, knows more about that and is qualified in working in those areas than I am personally as a coach.
Sure.
So yeah, I think that's very important. I think
and from a
yeah.
and from a like a program structure, macro cycle point of view, mesocycle, micro cycle, and understanding where a woman is in her period cycle, her menstruation, where she's going to be, where she's ovulating, that can be really at an advantage. Because as we know, when a woman is ovulating, it's most likely the best time to do any PB lifts and to be, you know, training a little bit harder in the gym, pushing yourself a bit more. So it's actually quite interesting from a coach's perspective to know and ask those questions from your athletes and be, and care, just care about what's going on. You don't have to get technical. You don't have to get sciencey because it can get a little bit confusing, but understanding when she feels best versus when she feels worst can play such a huge role in advancing your clients, your athlete from the next level, from beginner to intermediate to et cetera, et cetera.
Definitely. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's really, I think the biggest thing is caring. It really is. Like whether it's an athlete or it's not, like asking those questions and caring, because it's not just about training and nutrition. There's so much to it, and asking the right questions and having, building that relationship with your client and your athlete, it's going to help them in the end and make you a better coach as well, because you're both going to learn from each other. So,
And a side note, if any coaches are listening to this and don't understand that type of stuff for women, seek help, ask for help, go speak to some other coaches or find out some information on period health that is useful and that you can start to kind of educate yourself. Otherwise, you can, you know, if you start asking your clients and you don't know what you're talking about, that can also be very detrimental. So if you do need to speak about that stuff, if you do want to learn about a woman's cycle, there are lots of resources, and definitely reach out to either of us and we can kind of point you in the right direction as well.
That's it. Listen to your podcast.
That too.
Well, I mean, I came to you. Remember when I came to you a few months ago and I was like, Raquel, tell me what's happening now. Like, so, you know, it's not, although I'm a female, I'm still learning about my cycle and the ins and outs. And unless it's like anything, unless you dive deep and deep and deep into it, you're not going to, not every coach is going to specialize in every area. So I know, you know, you're quite educated and enjoy that sort of thing. So I came to you for that. So it's important to ask for help. We're not expected to know everything.
No, because if we know everything, that's, what's the quote? It's jack of all trades, master of none. That's the one.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. Anyway, so Amy, thank you for all of our chat today. It's been so informative and it's been so interesting to talk to you, and it's just been nice to see you as well after so long. I'm not seeing anyone else. So, yeah, just leave your details and let my followers know where they can find you, where they can suss you out, ask you any questions and stuff too.
Sure. So I've got my Instagram, which is Coach Amy Crook. And also my email is amy@enterprisefitness.com.au. And you can also go on the Enterprise Fitness website, go into the team little tab, and you'll see me in there along with the other guys. So yeah, that's the best two places to find me. I'm always at Enterprise, so that's where you'll get me.
I'll tag Amy in the show notes, and in the Instagram post as well, so you can directly follow and suss her out there as well or ask any questions.
Awesome.
But yeah, as Amy said, she's all up in the Enterprise website and her email and things like that, which she just said. Okay, cool. So that's it for today. Thank you for coming on, and I'll speak to you very soon. And yeah.
Pleasure. Thank you so, so much.
I never know how to end these podcasts. It's so hard. It's like, ugh. Thanks for joining us, Amy.
No, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to episode 20 of the Female Health Show. You've been listening to Amy and myself talk about performance. If you have any questions, please feel free to email or DM us directly via our Instagram or email address. The information is in the description box, whichever directory you are listening to this from. Don't forget to subscribe if you're listening to this episode on Spotify or iTunes so you can get regular updates of when I upload my newest and latest episodes. See you in episode 21, everyone.